The next case was presented by Dr. Cliff Huddis and is of great interest in that the relevant clinical research database on this issue, specifically selection of adjuvant chemotherapy in patients with HER2-positive tumors, changed dramatically in San Antonio with a presentation by Dr. Dennis Slayman on the second analysis of BCIRG-006 evaluating two chemo-trastuzumab combinations.
This is a 45-year-old woman who's in good health and active, busy. She has a 2.3-centimeter breast cancer. It is HER2-positive with a FISH somewhere north of 2.5. The ER and PR are negative. Four lymph nodes are involved. She's had a lumpectomy. She's planning radiation therapy. And the question, of course, is, along with trastuzumab, what chemotherapy will we give?
So what happened with this patient, Cliff?
Well, she came to Memorial Sloan Kettering, so she got dosed in
If you could talk a little bit about the clinical research database around that decision.
I think it's worth spending a minute on this to highlight a couple of key commonalities. Firstly, most of the trials are built on an AC taxane backbone. In the case of the B31 and 9831, the BCRG trial, which was just updated by Dennis Slayman at this meeting, actually is very much similar because in this trial, it's again AC and a taxane, in this case, docetaxel. Now, the third arm of this trial is novel because it's a translation of preclinical models suggesting synergies for the platinum salts and docetaxel, and it has two advantages that follow from that. The first is that the trastuzumab starts early, and the second, of course, is the AC itself. It allows you to avoid the cardiotoxic drug and therefore perhaps offer the same advantages without the disadvantage of an anthracycline. Now, at this meeting, we were lucky enough to see an update that is a second interim analysis of the BCRG trial. Both TCH and ACTH are significantly better than the control arm, that is ACT alone. There's been a fair bit of discussion about potential differences between the two trastuzumab-containing regimens, and in this analysis, you certainly can't conclude anything in that regard. Overall survival was provided at this meeting as well, and again, there's a very nice finding, which is that either of the trastuzumab-containing regimens appears to be much better than the non-trastuzumab-containing regimen. I will purposely not get into the topoisomerase 2 story because while it is exceedingly interesting and very provocative on many levels, it is not nearly as corroborated as the rest of these findings and is not yet a reason to make clinical decisions, though it may well be. Now, the case that we were discussing and the answer I gave was in terms of giving dose-dense AC paclitaxel, and I'll remind you that CLGB9741 controlled for dose and cycle number of each of the three agents in it, making it a pure test of two questions, one being concurrent AC versus sequential AC, and the second being Q2 scheduling versus Q3, this, of course, requiring GCSF. And when updated just last year at this meeting, there continued now out past 6 years a statistically significant improvement in disease-free survival. Overall, when one compares Q2 to Q3, there is and never was any difference in the sequential or concurrent administration. This is true as well for overall survival. More importantly, for the case at hand, this is an ER and PR negative tumor, and if there is a clear-cut advantage for dose-dense therapy overall, it's even more clear when one looks at the ER-PR negative subsets. This is consistent with the broad retrospective work conducted by Don Burry in the CLGB, but curves for the ER-PR negative subsets when looking at disease-free survival reveal a marked improvement in outcome, which one doesn't want to dismiss too quickly, in my opinion. Now, of course, that raises the cardiac toxicity issue. When one goes back and looks at the BCRG trial, and it's very important to point out that there is a clear difference emerging between the anthracycline-containing regimens and those that don't contain the anthracyclines, and especially in the era of trastuzumab, the overall percentage incidence of cardiac events in this trial is significantly higher than in the two regimens that either lack the anthracycline or lack the trastuzumab. That brings me to the crazy idea to give dose-dense therapy with trastuzumab. Firstly, I have to point out a counterintuitive observation in toxicity. Q3 AC paclitaxel, either sequential or concurrent, was associated with 24 reports of grade 3 or greater cardiac events. That's how we captured it in this trial out of 1,000 patients, or 2.5%. Interestingly, when we gave it Q2 with GCSF, if anything, the incidence was lower. In fact, it was lower by half. Not that I'm suggesting there's a statistically significant safety advantage to Q2 therapy. Far be it from me to even go anywhere near such a crazy statement. But the truth is, there's not a whiff of evidence that it's more dangerous to give Q2 than Q3. That's all I would say. Based on that, we felt comfortable proceeding with a pilot trial, 04126 at Memorial, which Chao Dang ran for us, has reported previously both at this meeting and ASCO and updated at this very meeting, I think tomorrow morning. What we did is gave Dostense AC and then paclitaxel with trastuzumab. The trastuzumab is weekly during these 8 weeks and then Q3 afterwards, actually. It's not 52 doses any longer. And we conducted cardiac safety monitoring with four assessments exactly modeled on the B31 strategy. 70 patients were enrolled. This was as of May. And the bottom line, firstly, is I know a lot of people are concerned about AC as a cause of dropouts, but in 70 patients who get four doses of AC, we had zero dropouts for declined EF. Now, that could be because it's a single center. That could be because just a few readers are doing them. But any of those factors are interesting to me, given the concern of about a 10% rate in the general public of declining EFs leading to dropout. Secondly, among those patients who then went through the paclitaxel and trastuzumab treatment, we have had one case of congestive heart failure and a few other cases of LVEF drops without symptoms and a few other withdrawals just because patients didn't want to finish the study. But we have not crossed our predetermined threshold for toxicity, and we have a high degree of confidence that this is no more dangerous than the Q3-week regimens, and it is based on that we believe it's a reasonable option. It's important for me to point out that it's at least my belief that none of you would actually randomize patients for Q2 or Q3 in the presence of trastuzumab now. And so this is not a situation where we're likely to ever to be able to do a phase 3 trial for the narrow question of dose-dense therapy in the setting of trastuzumab. So what are the options for chemotherapy in addition to trastuzumab? I think you have several, frankly. And to be fair about all this, a sequential AC and taxane option, I think, is wide open for many patients. You can do either weekly paclitaxel per 9831, or you could use docetaxel or paclitaxel Q3 if you're a believer in either of those. Our contention would be that dose-dense appears to be safe, and especially in the ER-negative subset, it may represent an incremental advantage above and beyond the standard Q3 regimens, but I'm not going to suggest to you that I have proof of that. TCH is clearly another option, and it may be equal to or better than what I've described for dose-dense therapy. It is not the option that we've been using, but it is not an option that can be criticized based on the available data. Obviously, I think in many circumstances, many clinicians will choose this, and I suspect many more will choose it in the years to come. Cardiac toxicity is the reason, and there are clearly more events with anthracyclines. Most of the events are early. It is not clear that any specific anthracycline-containing regimen thus far studied leads to a different risk. That is AC Q3 versus Q2, and that's the reason that we're willing to do that. I do think in the long term, the impact of those subclinical ejection fraction falls need to be followed, and there's many more chapters still to tell in this story.
I'd like to start with Aman and ask you how comfortable you feel in terms of cardiac safety with the dose-dense regimen Cliff described based on a small number of patients. Same kinds of question came up in your neoadjuvant study where you utilized an anthracycline and trastuzumab. Can 70 patients be enough to comfort us that this is relatively safe?
I think anthracycline-based therapies do carry a small but definite risk of cardiac dysfunction, but it is quite clear from the data which Cliff reviewed and also from the Oxford overview, there is no question that anthracycline-based therapies are superior than the non-anthracycline-based therapy. Both, I think, in my judgment, in regardless of the HER2-new status, because the HER2-new is the new player in the field, but if you look at it overall, there is about 11 to 13% reduction in the risk of recurrence and about similar proportion reduction in the risk of death. And occasional patients, yes, can get cardiac dysfunction, but it is not a major issue on which we should be worried about it. TCH has its own problems, and I think we need to be aware of that. I personally have used occasionally TCH, and it causes far more myelosuppression, and there are risks of therapy-related infections, which could be a serious problem to these patients. And these patients are elderly. Sometimes they could have a renal dysfunction or some of the other complications.
John, what about this issue of myelosuppression with TCH, and what are your thoughts in general about the choice of chemotherapy today as opposed to maybe a month ago?
Well, first of all, your specific question with myelotoxicity is quite interesting. If you compare 8 cycles of ACTH to 6 cycles of TCH, as per the 006 protocol, in fact, there's less myelosuppression, there's less grade 3 febrile neutropenia, and less, there are actually fewer numerically neutropenic infections on the TCH arm. So the data that we have from the one available study would suggest that with regards to myelotoxicity, in fact, TCH is safer. Now, a month ago, before I was given the pleasure of looking at the update of the 006 data, which I must admit was one of the most interesting days of my life, I would tell you that I would have chosen ACTH, a standard schedule, AC sequential taxane with Herceptin for a given patient. But now that we have this data, I really do think that it's time to re-examine the long-term risks of chemotherapy when we have a highly effective biologic. And I think the biologic is trumping the chemotherapy backbone. But if you have an option wherein you don't have the risk of long-term leukemia, and you don't have the apparent risk of a substantial increase in cardiotoxicity, and we know from the long-standing anthracycline data that when you actually look for left ventricular ejection fraction problems, they're there, and increasingly so at 7 and 10 and 15 years, my feeling is there are many chapters to be written, as Cliff has said, and I appreciate that because I think as we turn the pages, we're going to see that anthracyclines, I would like to say, are a drug for the start of the century, but not for the middle of the century.
Dabu, what are your thoughts about choice of chemotherapy in the HER2-positive patient? Will you go back to your clinic on Monday, see a young woman in good health, 5 positive nodes? What would you have done a month ago, and has that changed?
It's only changed a little bit in terms of where I draw the line for using TCH if I'm concerned about cardiotoxicity. I still think that the most represented regimen for which we have the longest term and most robust data is still AC, followed by weekly paclitaxel. Remember that this is still the second interim analysis, so the results may still change. I think as time goes on, if these data hold up, then I think TCH could emerge really as an option that we are confident is equal. But I do think that the longer term follow-up, more events, more confidence in the data. Remember, data comes in slowly. We adopt things slowly. We shouldn't ever adopt wholesale overnight. So what I would say is that I feel more comfortable using TCH when I am concerned about cardiotoxicity, so older patients or those that may have hypertensive disease, longstanding hypertension.
One final question to Cliff. Do you see dose-dense AC paclitaxel trastuzumab being incorporated in future trial designs, or is this going to always sort of stay out there on the fringe?
It's hard for me to answer that because it really depends on who's doing the trial designing. The next generation trial, and actually, since you asked me, and I can't help myself, I know everybody heard George Sledge's comments at the meeting. The truth of the matter is there is no large U.S.-only adjuvant therapy trial currently being planned. We are joining forces appropriately with the Europeans, sponsored by the Intergroup, to look at the lapatinib and trastuzumab question. That trial is hero-like in the sense that there's some flexibility. AC is going to be given to those patients before they go on trial. It's not going to matter if it's dose-dense or Q3. So it's just not part of the question. But
so they'll allow dose-dense in that?
Yes.
Interesting.
The issue is you enroll in that trial at the end of the AC, the post-op portion. So it's not the same exact design as the traditional U.S. trials.
Hal?
I also think it's possible that trastuzumab is the great equalizer such that the specific chemotherapy program becomes a lot less important in the setting of adjuvant trastuzumab. And we've seen a couple examples of that. In CALGB 9840, which looked at weekly paclitaxel versus every 3 week, it favored weekly paclitaxel, but in the subset of patients that were HER2 positive and also got trastuzumab, the results were equivalent. And similarly, in the study 007 from the BCIRG that was docetaxel plus trastuzumab versus carboplatin docetaxel trastuzumab, the results were exactly the same. And so it's possible that the flavor of the chemotherapy really becomes a lot less important from a point of view of trastuzumab treatment. And as people have said, one will focus on the toxicity. I've been wondering about the TCH data myself, and I've not given TCH historically because when you first visually looked at the curves, they didn't seem to favor it. I've been impressed by the data as they were shown, and I've got 4 reasons why there still might not be as good, but it's hard to defend any of them. The first is, you know, that regimen gave the trastuzumab first instead of the chemotherapy first, and it's possible that that's a better sequencing strategy. The second is that we don't know what effect there was for amenorrhea. And it's interesting that the early recurrences were different, but the later recurrences tend to equalize, which tends to smell more like hormone receptor positive recurrences. A third is that 7% of patients in the intergroup study who got AC alone were lost to trastuzumab. So on an intent to treat basis, it might make the TCH look better, though on an absolute basis, it's hard to know. And the fourth is that it may be that every 3-week AC without trastuzumab isn't so good. Having said all that, I found the TCH data very intriguing.